How's it going tonight? It's going good. Good, 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 good.
Excellent.
Okay. There's a lot going on, isn't there?
Two things.
Well, there's the Iraqi thing, which is going again. What did I say? I said it would go again, and it will, and it will get sorted out, and it will go again. That's Pugsley, right? Okay, the stock market, and it's yo-yos. Yo-yo-yo-yo-yo-yo, up and down, up and down. Again, what did I say? At the start of the year, it would do some wild things. It's doing pretty well, so I think that's 2 points for me. As opposed to saying that the Steelers would win, that's a minus, I think. But that was just off the cuff, not even thinking and looking at the facts. Okay, what else is going on the topics tonight? Ah, fiscal monetary collapses and the factoring in with the fiscal goings on in the market. Okay, how does that work? How does that factor in? Well, about a year and 6 months ago, I made the comments about the reason for the problems that are coming would be an external source, that there was a high probability that that would be the case. And it looks like, unfortunately, I'm right again. What to do? What to do? I know. Astral travel and answers and questions.
Okay.
Okay, you have questions.
On astral travel. What about the technique of imagining yourself at the foot of the bed and then directing your consciousness to that imagination, that visualization?
Yes, that does work in some cases. I don't personally recall having ever done that, and I'm pretty sure Mark has never done that. And if he continues swearing like that, I'm going to scratch his eyes out.
Then continue doing that. Want to throw him out the back door
He, where is he's out there, isn't
now? In
he?
the garage.
Yes. Let him in, then throw him out the back door. That'll keep him happily entertained for a few.
Okay.
But so I talk about astral travel and imagining your consciousness at the foot of the bed meeting. Well, this again is another technique that is worth exploring. The exploration of that technique is something that should be done. Tell you what, let me in, let him get a bite to eat. That's what he's demanding, is food. There he goes, straight off to the food, right? Okay. And in using various techniques and experimentation with those techniques, we give an individual the best feel for what technique works for her or him. And the techniques that we have described work for us and have worked in trials up here for us. So therefore, it's not right for us to say that those are the appropriate ones to use. It's just alternatives to try. And whatever works for the individual works, regardless of the fact of whether it is doing the laying down in a circle and using candles, or a 10 deep and 10 shallow, listening to nice soothing music. Those are just two possible ways of astral traveling. You can get as many astral travel masters together as you can from different countries, and they will talk and they will pick out certain things that are working for them. But cobbling all those ideas together and coming up with a right formula that works for everyone is something that would be difficult. As for projecting your consciousness to the foot of the bed and traveling from there, that is just another kind of astral travel.
So best bet is maintaining the calm, using the breathing, projecting yourself in the ways you described before.
No, I didn't say that. What I said was that what works for the individual works for the individual. And experimentation is the best thing. Our methods work up here. And the other method that is used in the How to Astral Travel is something that Mark and myself worked on together that works also well. But I did not say that they were the only ones.
Right.
They are other possible ways of astral traveling. And to re-go over what I just said, there are a myriad of possible ways to astral travel.
Okay. Now, when you were switching dimensions, is there any way that you can ease that process up?
I don't see that there is. It does get eased up with more and more usage and practice, certainly. But the rough crossover appears to be part of it. It's a little bit like the early vessels that you had that were breaking the sound barrier. Yeah, for them to start off with, it was a real choppy, jumpy movement. And as the pilots progressed onto better and better aircraft, it got easier and easier and smoother and smoother.
So basically, just at first, you kind of scared going through that.
I wouldn't say scared, and that anxiety and an adrenaline rush.
All right. Once you go through there, though, you're connected by your silver cords. If you have any problems, it can draw you right straight back.
Yes. Yeah. It's something that should not be worrying. If you're not ready to do it, you can't do it. Full stop. End of discussion. End of subject. End of matter. Period. Boom. That's it. But if you are ready, and you can do it, and you have the power and the capability and the technical knowledge on how to do it, it shouldn't present too much of a problem, apart from the fact of the adrenaline, the excitement of doing it.
Well, now, we haven't really talked about the technical knowledge of doing it. All we've discussed is the theoretical knowledge, followed by Mark's descriptions of going through it. Mine is a little bit different.
Yeah.
So what technical knowledge would be necessary for someone just starting out who wishes to do this?
But the technical knowledge would be knowing the correct point of exiting, the necessary speed to be achieved to do the breakthrough.
Is that different with everyone?
It varies from person to person. To a certain extent, there are key things that are the same. The building feeling of as you approach it, the excitement increases and increases. And that's also the energy building up that's enough to project to create the breach for you to jump through. Those are pretty much common things throughout all astral travel, all trans-dimensional astral travel, should I say. Okay, the technical data is the necessary velocity increases as the approach for the jump occurs. Obviously, the faster you go, the quicker you achieve it, the more energy is built up to be able to make the penetration for the jump. And the projection necessary to create the breach or hole is the same amount for everyone. It just depends on how much energy a person is capable of projecting for that purpose. As the energy builds up, and as the critical moment is approached, the energy is focused in such a way ahead of the person that it creates the breach or hole as the person approaches. Now, obviously, the hole seals up directly behind the person and seals around the umbilical cord that keeps them in touch with their third dimensional or sixth dimensional work. Now, it's a constant, same build up either way, coming or going, making the jump from or to. And the velocity that is achieved at that critical moment, coupled with the energy, creates the jump. The more energy that is put in, of course, the faster the jump, which also goes with the velocity. However, if the hole closes before you reach it, then you do not go slap bang into a wall. You just carry on going as you were in the same dimension, just getting faster and faster as you would expect as you approach the velocity that is necessary to make the jump. However, if you've already projected the energy and the hole closed before you achieve the correct velocity, then that doesn't matter because you can always, you know, project more energy in to do the same thing if you have the energy reserves to do it. Now, if something does go wrong, the friction created on the umbilical cord reopens the hole so that you can pop out. Mm-hmm. It pulls you back, and no more elapsed time has passed than would normally be expected in the duration of the jump. You see, when you go through into the fourth dimension before you head to the fifth dimension, the cord slides along with you. It doesn't say stationary at, let us pick a fictional time of about 9:30. It continues sliding up through all the time possibilities and variabilities. They slide around your umbilical cord as it progresses on up on the relevant time. So when you make the re-entry and you are spooling in your umbilical cord, as it were, that's a word I hate to say, spooling, then it moves up with you. Otherwise, you would be re-entering at the exact same time that you left, which would be very, very difficult to achieve. Right. Now, with duration jumps, it is slightly different on the umbilical cord due to the fact that the elapsed time may be 5 hours, but you actually return an hour after you left. That involves a little bit of tricky stuff, which I'm not fully comprehensible on. You'd have to talk to the experts on that.
Okay, now what about the abilities to jump from third to the seventh dimension?
Well, basically, they are very similar. It just takes more energy to make all those various energy build-ups and jumps. For example, when Mark goes from, or you go from, the third dimension to the fourth dimension, what you are doing is projecting energy to breach the fourth, and then energy to breach into the fifth. It's just more projection of energy for the jumps. For example, on the 20th, I believe you have been invited to a formal function on the sixth dimension. And the energy that is necessary is not for a jump to the fifth, but a jump to the sixth. So you go from the third to the fourth as your first jump point, to the fifth, that's the second jump point, to the sixth, which is your third jump point. You just need, yeah, a third more energy than you normally do.
Let's see. It's just so the seventh you go with the other one.
Correct. Now
what changes are you going to recognize in the seventh and more in the sixth?
I don't know. I've never been there.
I guess the question is clear. I'll ask them all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. Okay, do you have any other questions in my field of expertise?
Indonesia.
That was my obtruse fiscal reference.
I figured that.
What is going on? What is going on? And what have you been eating? You. Making gaseous noises. Well, maybe we should vent him outside for that.
Come on, Kevin.
But yes, Indonesia. Indonesia and its fiscal problems and the loans from various governmental agencies, and it's not just Indonesia that is having problems.
Oh, yeah, Thailand, China, Hong Kong.
And their unwillingness to make changes in their economic practices. And the annoyance of fiscal bailouts of US and other European governments that have given the fiscal bailout, and their anger at those countries not being prepared to make the necessary changes.
Well, how do we expect to get paid back in those loans?
I don't know. I don't know what people were thinking. I don't fully understand what is going on. I don't think they fully understand what's going on.
For example, if they don't pay to foreclose on the country.
Well, would that mean that everybody would get a piece of Indonesia, Hong Kong, China, Singapore?
Now, the reason they're bailing them out is to prevent a worldwide collapse, correct?
No, yes, that is their belief.
And all they're doing is slowing down the process.
They're postponing the inevitable.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, in essence, they're just throwing good money after bad.
Yes.
And what is causing the collapse in the first place? We never have really discussed that.
Okay, what is causing it?
Drought or rice shortage or what?
Actually, it's quite a number of factors. It's the fact that there was a boom. And during the boom, they used money to buy things. And because they were having a boom, people extended them credit. And they used that credit after, not so much after, but whilst they were having the boom, to be able to purchase more stuff. Now the notes are becoming due. And of course, the boom has long gone. Let us take Japan. In the mid-80s, they went crazy and started buying properties all over the United States. And the banks were having a boom, and the stock market was having a boom in Japan. And the Nikkei average was climbing and climbing and climbing. And everybody was having a wonderful time. So, U.S. government, U.S. businesses go, oh, well, Japan's a good investment. Let's loan them, the banks and the companies, money so that they can buy property at exorbitantly high rates. And in turn, we will get paid back plus the interest and we'll have more money. So that happened. The Japanese paid exorbitant fees for such places as Heavenly, and they stretched themselves. Then things started to happen that no longer was there a boom, but the cycle had gone a complete circle and was going the same way, but in reverse, that things were contracting. There was no longer the money going around to make the loans, to be able to pay the loans. And in turn, they had to start selling off their assets to make these loans.
So basically, Heavenly, Steamboat,
Sable Point,
all were sold to cover the interest rates and loans that were borrowed from.
Correct. However, and this is where it gets a little tricky, and this is going to open your eyes up tremendously, Russ. Whilst the Japanese were buying and having finally brought their companies, let us take the Japanese that brought Heavenly,
right,
they were still in a point of boom. So, with the money that they had, they went out and got more loans to put in more equipment. When they sold the debts as well. So that, for example, Steamboat, Heavenly, and Sable Point owed X number of millions of dollars. When the Japanese sold out, those debts were transferred to the new owners. The Japanese did not negotiate a very good deal, unfortunately. In fact, they have a balloon payment coming up. So, when the new owners of Heavenly bought Heavenly, they took on the debts and also have to make those payments.
So, they're hoping for a really good year
right now. Oh, yeah. They're hoping for a couple of really good years.
Well, they might do
them. No, they might.
Okay.
They might.
Now, so basically, we're seeing collapse coming from outside.
What did I say a year and six months ago?
So what about Germany, France, England, those countries?
They're getting affected as well.
Well, I know England has a really strong
economy.
Well, no, they've got a really strong possessions within Hong Kong and China.
Mm-hmm.
They're very committed to those areas.
Yes.
So a lot of their investments and everything are all tied to those banks.
Not as much as they once were. A lot of people did get out and reinvested elsewhere, in such places as the United States and Japan. Japan again. And their own markets. So, let us look at those countries. Well, the British stock market, the Paris Stock Exchange, and Frankfurt are all doing the same thing as the United States. Up and down, up and down, up and down. Like a yo-yo. And because they're invested and are pulling their money out of foreign markets, which is making the foreign markets go down and up and down, as investors chop and change, as investors do, looking for a quick profit, their markets do the same thing. Because if you take money or take shares from one place, sell them, let us say, in the United Kingdom, you sell your shares. Let's say you have 1 million shares in the BBC. I don't think you do that because it's a national corporation. Let us say British Petroleum, BP. You have 1 million shares in BP, right?
Right.
You sell those million, right? Which means that the price has to go down. Okay, whether or not you've made a profit, the price goes down. Okay, it depends on the margin of profit from the initial investment. You take that and invest it in, let us say, Japan, which makes the price in Japan go up. Now, you make a profit, and the following day you see the market starts to go back down. So you sell there, which makes the market go down even more, preferably for a profit, and reinvest it, let us say, back in the London market, which means the London market goes back up. Whereas the other day it went down, you're now watching it as it goes back up. Or you pick a market where it is going up and invest in there and force it up even higher. And then if you're clever enough, if you're playing the 24-hour game, you would go from, let us say, let us start off with Japan. You sell in Japan in the morning, and as evening comes around, you buy into the British stock market as that is going up. And at the end of the day, as it's gone up, you sell there just as the market reaches lunchtime, 12 o'clock, New York time or Chicago. You buy in there as that goes up, which means that you're making money. But as you're pulling out of each market, you're pulling out when it starts to go down. See what's happening?
Right.
But those are making real quick profits, real fast, making a real quick turnaround, where you were maybe making $1,000 on each market. But there again, you could also easily lose that. Or you may be only making a few hundred clear profit after traders' fees.
Okay, so how fragile is the markets right now?
Very fragile. By, looking at the markets and the increases, like 86 points today. And a drop last Friday of, I forget how high it was, how low it was.
Well, something that's interesting is, I was watching TV the other day, and it was like 4 or 5 in the morning, and the Nikkei and the Hong Kong and the Chinese, Hang Seng, had all lost massive amounts of
money.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, they were looking at a major collapse, or a major crash, well, not crash, but a downturn in the American stock market.
Mm-hmm.
And then by the end of the day, everything was up.
Yes.
All across the
board. Mm-hmm. Well, what happened was the investor saw an opportunity to make a quick profit because it was down, and they rush in, which pushes it up. Let us say you started off in the morning when it was down 130 points, right? And you put in $10,000 into the market, right? You may make a couple hundred dollars profit by the end of the day. Would you like to make a couple hundred dollars profit in one day?
Well, I want to lose a couple hundred dollars just in case.
But that's what ended up happening.
Right.
Is that all these investors rushed in because it was down low and pushed the price up and made a profit. Whereas if some bad news had come out, right, they could have just as easily pulled out and not rushed in and said, okay, let's wait until Tuesday morning or Monday morning and see what happens then over the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
It's not so much watching the market, it is watching how, or rather knowing how people react.
No, you can't control the news.
Correct. But how people react to the news, if you know that, right? Then you can make a profit. How are people going to react to good news and bad news? And what is good news and bad news? Let us say in 1929, right, you picked a small little company. Let us say you picked a small fledgling company called McDonnell Douglas or Fairchild. Okay. You invested, let us say, $1,000 and brought something like 1,000 shares. Do you know how much that 1,000 shares would be worth today? That's a lot of money, isn't it? Where did you get that figure from? Mm-hmm. Pretty good profit, huh? So, if you were to build yourself a time machine, what would you do?
Go back and find out the results, or know the results of all the Super Bowls back
in 20 years. Oh, that's easy to do. Just go and buy a book. It tells you what all the results were for the last 20 years.
Right.
Oh, I see. Why not just travel forward in time and pick up a book telling you the scores and results of all the sporting fixtures, just like supposedly happened in Back to the Future?
Yeah, that's a bad idea. Well, it's all right. I'm pretty scared.
Why?
There's too much weirdness in the world. I mean, people so concerned with money that they forget everything else. Except, you know, trivial enjoyment. Those who love trivial enjoyment so much, they forget all about things like morality and laws.
Oh, really?
And there's very few, really, you know, people who are concerned with other people.
And there's more than you think.
Well, temporary.
Should I?
I get the feeling that anything financial crashes and otherwise that happen are only for the good. Wake people up.
She doesn't understand playfulness, does she? Okay. Three. Greetings, Russ.
Greetings, Amal.
It has been some time, has it not?
It has indeed.
Approximately a month.
Nice to see you again.
Thank you, and it is good to see you too. I believe you have a question for me. To answer your question, it is different in the feel, the more in tune with the surroundings, the more vibrations from the surroundings, the more feeling of familiarity, the fact that in the seventh dimension, the trees are more aware. The rocks are more aware. Everything is more connected in the awareness of each other.
So all things manifest?
Yes. Being a manifest of myself, I am more in tune than other seven-dimensional beings with my surroundings, in my awareness, in the feelings of familiarity the feelings of being connected.
So when you manifest something, is that something aware?
For me, yes.
Isn't that sort of like being God?
No.
Okay.
What is God?
Well, I mean, the version of God that would be called the creator.
So, when you create a web page, are you being a god?
Well, the point of it is, though, with the awareness that you feel, let me take it to another point. Ashtar Athena, in her channeling to us, reflected heavily on the fact that we're all actors and actresses. And is that something you get into as the higher dimensions go up? You see more of the play?
Yeah. She does love to use analogies, does she not? Yes. You are more aware of the play. Instead of seeing just the actors on the stage, the backdrop on the stage, the music coming from the orchestra pit, you are more in tune with the movements of the actors. The fact that on the mantelpiece, maybe there is a clock. Maybe there is something else as well. You see more of the picture. You see more of the actor's movements. The fact that the lead person that is talking, who is doing their poor actor that struts and frets their hour upon the stage, the person behind them may be leaning on one arm, looking at them quizzically. The person to the left may be watching with their hands on their hips. The other person on the left part of the stage may be looking more into the audience. And somebody else may still be walking towards the speaker that is strutting and fretting that hour upon the stage. Instead of being just aware of the speaker and the backdrop and the orchestra, you are more in tune with what I have just mentioned, plus what they are wearing, the fabric that they are wearing, the texture, the color, the smells, the odors, the body movements, the body language, the meaning in their movements. You see, no longer is it just a person on the stage speaking and acting. It is an experience.
Rakortan has often said that it's very important to listen to what is being said.
That is a higher dimensional outlook, as well as something that is very useful and should be done on a third dimensional level.
Right. Now, let's take what you just said. This is more in the way of not only listening to the words of the play, but more paying attention to all the detail besides the words.
Yes. The detail may have some meaning. For example, let us say that you have a person that is playing a scene that is all depressed. And on the table is a dagger. It is there. It was there when the curtain came up. But you see the dagger. You are aware of the dagger. And the person is playing a depressed scene. They grab the dagger and they stab themselves in the heart. You see?
Mm-hmm.
You are more aware of what is going on. You see more detail. You know the fact that they are planning children, that they are planning something. The knife plays a part. There is a lady in the kitchen. This is on a stage. In the kitchen, you see that the table is set. She is complaining the fact that her husband is late. Now, what does this tell you? She is in the kitchen. On the kitchen table is a knife, a fork, a spoon, a napkin, a candle, a wine glass or two wine glasses, two plates, two knives, two forks, two spoons. What does this tell you?
So she's preparing for more people to eat to dinner.
Tells you something more than that. How often does a person have a candle on the table with wine glasses?
Tells you maybe someone special coming to dinner.
Good. Now, she is complaining. What does that tell you?
He's late.
Good. Put it all together. She is cooking a special dinner or has cooked a special dinner. She is expecting somebody of importance and she has set up accordingly and that person is late.
I see.
So it is being more aware of the goings on. Being more observant. For example, look around this room.
Mm-hmm.
What does it tell you?
It's a place of study. Mm-hmm. And a place of work.
Now, what kind of people have been in this room?
People who come just to learn.
More. There's more than that that is told. We're talking about observation.
Well, if you look at the tapes, you would see that, you know, there's mass amounts of information stored here, and that the people coming here, you know, are here to gain the information that is given.
There is also some thinking going on in here. There is a picture that indicates that. There is also culture, as in the pottery. There is a reminder or a keepsake from a young lady. There is a lot of energy. There is a lot of humor.
Healing.
A lot of healing. So it is not just a place where people come to study. It is a place filled with memories, humor, knowledge, energy, and I could go on listening.
Right. I see what you mean.
It is a room that has had a lot of love. I'm not talking about the love for all things. I'm talking about the love between people.
Mm-hmm.
It has had some physical love.
Mm-hmm. So,
these are all echoed in little pieces throughout the room.
So the first step is to listen. To gain that knowledge.
Correct.
And then to observe would be the next step.
Correct.
And then what comes after that?
Putting both together. Listening and observing. And finally, interacting. Being aware. Being in tune. Being able to know what to do. Doing the right thing. Which is not as easy as it sounds.
What about sense of humor in the higher dimensions?
Oh, we have a good sense of humor, as you have heard.
As I've heard, but not as often as I hear in the sixth dimension.
No.
Why? Is that because you see it? You see it more of the actors and the actresses.
Mm-hmm.
Then you should be laughing at the play, sad or happy, because you just see it as the play. You don't take it as serious as if it was real life.
Okay, Kara made a very good analogy a while back.
Okay.
Concerning seventh dimensional and higher individuals. For you, you work on the scale of 23 hours, 59 minutes. I work on a much longer time scale.
Mm-hmm.
So, I may laugh, I may make jokes, and I think I make quite a few jokes.
Quite a few, sure.
But in the time scale of you, you see it as occasionally. For me, I do not see it in that time scale of occasion.
I see. So you get more of a bigger picture.
Correct.
So it's tough to laugh 24 hours a day at something that's going on for a millennium.
Correct.
You hurt your face.
Put it this way. I told a joke to Corton.
Okay.
I told the joke, it would be close to 100 years now. This may in itself be a little bit of a joke. Corton got back to me on the joke just a few days ago. So you see, the timescales are very different.
Yeah.
When I talk of watching the Aurora Borealis 80,000 years ago, that is not that long ago.
Time just becomes meaningless.